Vous avez remarqué? Les Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques approchent à grands pas. Ça va être un moment génial, de fête, de célébration évidemment. Et je ne sais pas dans vos cercles, mais de mon côté, une bonne partie de mes amis parisiens préparent leurs vacances d'été et se posent la question de mettre leur appartement sur Airbnb à cette occasion. Ça pourrait financer au moins en partie leurs vacances, alors ça tombe sous le sens qu'ils y pensent. De mon côté, c'est certain, je serai à Lisbonne, donc mon appartement parisien, dont je suis propriétaire, sera sur Airbnb pour cet été, pendant les Jeux Olympiques et Paralympiques. D'ailleurs, ça me permettra de financer, en partie, mes vacances. Et vous? Imaginez ce que vous pourriez faire avec ce supplément de revenus. En réalité, votre logement pourrait rapporter plus que vous ne le pensez. Découvrez combien sur airbnb.fr/hôte. C'est airbnb.fr/hôte, H-O-T-E. Allez, place à l'épisode maintenant.
Hi everyone, this podcast is in two languages, so let me go back in French for a little while. Ce podcast est en anglais, il est en deux langues. Vous êtes ici sur la version originale. Si vous voulez retrouver le podcast en français, il est également disponible sur votre lecteur de podcast. Maintenant, je retourne en anglais. The Me Too movement arrived almost a year ago, and I received it quite openly because I've got a very huge feminine part. But at the same time, it questioned myself between masculinity and femininity, men and women. And so I have a lot of discussions around that subject. And so I received Jerry Hyde, that is a therapist specialized in men, and we discuss masculinity together. So I think this discussion is quite important. You'll see that I'm hesitating sometime with the questions. I'll leave you with this conversation. Allez, Vlan, c'est parti.
So hi, everyone. I'm with Jerry Hyde, and you're a therapist specialized on manhood. And we're going to talk about manhood and masculinity, which is a very, conflicted subject. There's a lot of people talking about feminism, but we're going to talk about the other part, the man. So my first question, I guess, is why would you, as a therapist, focus on men only?
I think that came about because I really didn't like men. And so when I started, I went and worked in a program for working with violent perpetrators, so male perpetrators of domestic violence. And I kind of went to apologize for being a man. I went to save women from these violent men. And very quickly, I discovered I had a huge amount of warmth and love and compassion for them. And I recognized that I think most of their violence came from their complete inability to express. They had just no language to talk about their vulnerability other than violence. And when I was a kid, I mean, I'm in my 50s, so I was raised in the 60s. I remember my father specifically telling me when I was going to school, if someone upsets you, just punch them, you attack them, you know, you fight. But no one ever taught me the language of what, how to express if I felt hurt, other than to fight. And so that then, you know, you grow up, and what are you going to do when you get into a relationship? And that's your training. So I didn't feel as judgmental of these men. I felt that they just needed to be given some alternative ways of communicating. And the program was remarkably effective. You know, once you taught them how to communicate when they were hurt and recognize, I think it wasn't, you know, communication came second. I think even recognizing that they were hurt was a bit of a leap for a lot of guys. So I think we're so shut off from our emotions that violence is an obvious one sometimes.
And I feel, I mean, that's a complicated subject because feminism is so out there, and I guess the women are very much into this fight. And I call it a fight internationally because it really is a fight for. Not, I mean, there's different forms of feminism, many different forms, but the one that I see most of the time is men's are brutal, men's are da da da, men's are like that, and da da da. And we hardly talk about men, like, or how complicated it is to be a man. And I feel like there's also a battle for men to to have, because as you just said, I mean, we explain to little boy that they should not cry. We explain to little boy that they should be strong. We explain to little boy that they should fight, And they don't access their vulnerability. And I had to read that book about vulnerability myself to actually understand. And even though I read it, I'm still having difficulties to cry myself, even though I'm by myself. So it really is embedded in me. How do you think men are hurt? Or do you think it is because of the society? What do you think about this battle between men and women? I'm very interested in to that.
Yeah, I'm kind of oblivious to it. I'm not. I mean, someone else came and talked to me recently, and they were talking about this gender war, and I thought, wow, I didn't know. I'm just sitting in my room talking to men. I don't really invest in that kind of rhetoric. I'm not sure how much it serves to call it a battle or a war. I think that's kind of inflammatory language, and I'm not. This is just my personal stance.
Sure,
I'm not really involved in gender politics. I'm just working with guys to try and the interesting thing that struck me for a long time is when I work with men, I usually do a lot of work in groups with them. I think what they're doing is they're finding permission to be more involved in their feminine side, because they sit and they cry and they express their emotions and they commune, and you know, the kind of masculine side of us tends to isolate when we're hurting, which I think is a problem. You know, I'm not saying it's wrong. I think going off by yourself and really contemplating, you know, you and I have both done that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's part of a great many spiritual practices is when you go off and you spend time really going inside. But if you really want to process it, then you come back and you commune in a group. And so my men's groups are inviting men to really step into their femininity without it being labeled as such.
Yeah.
Because the minute you label it as that, people kind of, you know, men will withdraw. I don't want to be feminine. But, you know, that's really what's going on.
Actually, and I think it's a very important point. It's that both women and men have feminine and masculine parts. But the issue is, to me, that when a man have a strong feminine part, he's probably gay, which is an insult, in French at least. When we say, like, sale pédé or whatever, I don't know if that... Yeah, you would say that in English also. It's also an insult in English. So maybe that's also why men have difficulties to connect with it, because they gotta be ashamed of having a feminine part. Or maybe that's something that people don't understand, that we all have both parts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really part of our culture. I mean, you look at Eastern imagery and icons, and you will see Shakti and Shiva portrayed as kind of split down the middle as masculine and feminine, or yin and yang. I mean, it's there in so many symbols. I think we're a healthy, functional, psychologically, emotionally functional human being, for me, is someone who's balanced their masculine and feminine. And that's why I'm not so drawn into the gender war thing. I think that, you know, as a culture, as a society, we're very out of balance, and we still met both. This is a contentious one, and this is not something that I would dare to say if it came from me, but I feel I have permission to say it because it came from a woman, right? And I think we really, really do need strong women to stand up and say things that men are too frightened to say, or it's too dangerous, you know, for men to say. But this is from a feminist friend of mine. Yeah. And she came into one of my groups. We did a talk with her, and she came into one of my groups. And she said, well, of course, the problem is that it's not just men that are misogynistic. It's women are very misogynistic. And I was like, whoa, back up. What did you just say? And, you know, if I said something like that, I'd be terrified of the consequences. And she said, well, you know, if misogyny is a hatred or a persecution of the feminine, of femininity, then women are responsible for that also, because they will persecute a man if he's perceived as overly feminine. He will be seen as weak. And therefore, it is a form of misogyny.
Totally.
And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I think if you look at that culturally, I wonder, I'm just thinking out loud, I don't, you know, don't hold me on this one, but I wonder if that's part of the essence of homophobia, is that it's actually a misogyny because we, you know, it's that dislike of the feminine in men. But I also think that it's something that's being overlooked, which is in the fight for women's rights and women's equality, what seems to have happened to me as a man is that women have been, they've earned the right to be like men.
Exactly.
And I don't see a particularly overt celebration of femininity. I think that's still something that is perceived as weak and less than. And I think until we really address that, we're in trouble. And it's not enough just to say to him, you can go and get a job now and you can wear a suit and you can behave like men, you know, because I think that's kind of missing the point for me. You know?
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, first you have to acknowledge that before being a man or a woman, you're a human being, and any human being should be equal. That's pretty much what it's about. But then we should celebrate, and that's exactly what you said, the feminine and the masculine. And I guess women have earned a lot of rights doing so, and that's totally okay, for sure. But somehow men didn't. If you have a man wearing a dress, for example, in the street, or high heel, that would be very weird, which is not very weird.
But it's not about masculinity. It's more of the persecution of femininity.
Yeah.
You know,
and what I think does it mean?
That's what I mean when I say I'm not that interested in this war between men and women. I'm much more interested in these energies, you know, masculinity and femininity, and balancing that out.
And actually, I heard you in one video, I think, when you were describing men as boat and women as sea. Do you remember that?
Men as
a boat.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, that wasn't me. I was quoting David Dada, and right. he's not talking about men and women. He's talking about masculinity and femininity.
Right. Yeah. Sorry.
That's a mistake I make all the time because it's sure. So easy to slip into that language.
Sure.
But I think it's much healthier to talk about masculinity and femininity, or it's a separate issue almost to men and women. That's one thing. But these energies. A different thing, and I quite like Dada. I'm not sure I want to hang out with him, but I like some of his teachings, which are essentially 25,000-year-old tantric teachings that he's jazzed up for a Western palate. And he describes the masculine principle as a boat that just wants to go in a straight line across the sea, and he describes the feminine principle as the sea, which is deep and powerful and unpredictable, and one minute it's really calm, the next minute it's a raging storm. But he's not saying the boat is good and the sea is bad. It's just there are these two different things. And I think for me, part of the problem growing up in the culture I did, I think there was a blurring of sameness was the same as equality. And I don't think that masculine and feminine are not the same, but there was a sense that if you're going to be equal, then everyone's got to be the same. And I think everyone loses out on that because we are not the same and we don't necessarily want to be the same.
And that's probably one thing. I mean, and I guess men receive mixed messages now with the Me Too movement and stuff. Like, we want you to be very sensitive and, I mean, and also want, like, having a real man. I've heard songs like Where Are the Mans? And it's kind of mixed. When you have, I think a man that is crying can be looked as beautiful, but not all the time. And by everyone, they might be thinking he's weak. Same goes with vulnerability, isn't it? Or
yeah, I mean, I think men can go. We can go in two directions. We can either just collapse and abandon our masculinity and become very apologetic and frightened and try really hard to get it right. Or you can go the other way and become quite aggressive and Donald Trump-like, yeah. And defiant. And I don't think, you know, neither of those are the answer, right? There's a place in the middle where you haven't abandoned your own personal authority or your own personal power or your own ability to communicate your needs. But you're also not a thug who just demands to have your dinner on the table when you come home and blah, blah, blah. You know, I mean, it's much subtler than that. And I don't know that You know, I mean, men aren't working, man. They're not working on themselves as a culture. You know, I work with...
But why is that?
Well, I don't think they think of it. I mean, there was a beautiful thing a tantric teacher said. It was a man a long time, years and years ago. He said, Tantra is teaching men what women have always known. And I think women do, you know, or, you know, the feminine principle has that innate connection with emotion. And men are busy, you know, we're busy doing stuff, you know. And
but men, women are busy too now.
Yeah, they are. They are, you know.
But they're
more
still
than
connected
ever,
to the... Yeah.
But I think they are more, you know, part of it is cultural, you know, part of it is social training, but part of it is their nature. And I think men need a lot more encouragement, and it's just not part of our society, not in the UK anyway. And I doubt
France,
it's
any
different. I think it's probably, you know, more developed in America.
Do you think so?
I really don't know, but I mean, a lot of the self development stuff seems to emerge from there. So
yeah,
I think there are pockets of America, you know, probably New York, LA. There's in fact San Francisco. There are probably more men's groups, but I've been told I've got possibly the biggest men's group practice in Britain. That amounts to 30 guys. Right? I've got four groups of eight, so 32 people.
Yeah, which is
that's the biggest.
Nothing.
You know, that's nothing. That's nothing. But most people don't even know what they. Never heard of a men's group, and really, that's the place to go and work on your masculinity. Is go find a men's group as a man,
and yet there are like I've seen this group that is horrible. I think it's led from a Canadian guy where he's like, "Oh, we should rape women." You know, it's a group. I think it's a Facebook group or whatever. However, there is a connect.
Rouge V.
I don't know.
Return of the Kings. Yeah,
yeah, like brutalize women and da da da.
Yeah,
and I feel like
he lives with his mother. You know, that's all I got to say about Rouge V. He lives with his mother. Yeah. Sorry, man. Grow up. You know, it's just that's just outdated bullshit. Yeah.
So, do you think there's a fight for men about the masculinity and the feminine and the femininity?
What's femininity? The fight for? Where do we need to fight?
I don't know. Like,
I'm not
least...
fighting for anything. You know, I'm just quietly, in my own way, trying to be responsible. And it's back to what we've talked about previously about looking at your shadow side. I'll tell you something that really changed my relationship to my masculinity was I grew up in a culture, and a lot of guys moan about this. But I grew up in a culture which said that all men are rapists or potential rapists, mm-hmm, right? Not mm-hmm. rapists, but potential rapists. And I really fought against that, and it really hurt. And I spent probably 35 years going, but I'm not, you know, I'm one of the good guys. And then one day, I don't know what made me think this, but one day I just went, okay, all right, fine. I'm a potential rapist. I'm going to stop fighting against this. I'm going to stop denying it. I'm going to stop complaining about this unfair message. And I'm just going to go, yeah, I am. I'm a potential rapist. I could do that, but I choose not to. Yeah. And that flipped something inside me. So instead of walking around apologizing for being a man, I started to walk around feeling proud that I was someone who could rape, but was in charge of that energy within myself and was choosing not to act it out in any way. And that changed so much around my sexuality, my sex life, my ability to have a sex life, because as long as I was apologizing, it really wasn't working for my woman, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
So is it okay if I touch you? That, you know, that's not a turn on.
Yeah, I have got a lot of women's friends who actually complain about their boyfriend making love to them and not fucking them somehow. And that's pretty much in the same direction.
Yeah, tiptoeing around in bed is not sexy. You need to be, I think you've got to be in charge of that rapist. And there needs to be just a frisson of danger in sex where you go, whoa, this is a little bit scary, but I trust this guy that he's in charge of himself and he's not going to hurt me. And he's sensitive enough about where I'm at that he's not going to cross the line. But it's right on the edge of the line. That's sexy. You know,
yeah.
But a lot of guys are just too frightened to go there in case they get it wrong, or they don't give a shit and they just do what they do. And, you know, that's
and usually that's not brilliant.
neither side works, right? Neither side works. But being frightened of your masculinity or apologetic about your masculinity is not helping. Yeah. So I think if there's a battle, if there's a fight, if there's a war, that's appropriate, but it needs to be within yourself. You know, again, you need to be working through that fight between your own fears and your own animal sides, because we, as men, we have all sorts of dangerous sides to our sexuality, and mm-hmm. you've got to be willing to look at it. I mean, we're just repeating the conversation we had earlier, really, but you've got to go and look at that potential rapist and really understand it to be in charge of it.
So, yeah, it's true. But when you look at the Me Too movement, I mean, you can't ignore that reality. I mean, it actually happens. And I mean, I actually wonder, what is that movement? What do women expect from men, really? How would you put that? What would you say?
Just trying to get a fair deal, aren't they? And they're wondering where all the men have gone.
yeah. Especially, I've got some friends who've been to Berlin. When in Berlin, I mean, you can go naked in a club, nobody's going to touch you. And they feel like, okay, where are the men? Like, what's going on here? Yeah. And somehow,
I think it's a big frustration, because the new man movement, if it is a movement, I don't know if it's such a thing as even a movement, but the concept of the new man, this guy who helps out around the house and changes the baby's nappies, but it's so neutral. You know, I think it went too far. And again, the word I keep coming back to is apologetic. I think you're either unapologetic, and that just means you're not even exploring yourself, or you've just become ashamed of being a man. And I think women are really, really bored of that, you know, and quite right too.
Do you think men have been hurt by all this movement somehow?
Oh, God, I don't care. I mean, I think men are ashamed. I think they're really ashamed. Right. And I think there's a degree of appropriateness to shame. But you don't want to get so ashamed that you just run away and hide. You want to go, okay, I think there's some problems in our society, and I think we need to step up a little bit. But yeah, of course, all men are hurt. You know, everybody's hurt. That's not a reason not to look. That's a reason to actually go and find a men's group or a therapist or talk to some people, you know, and say, what's going on here? You know, just start communicating. But the danger when people are hurt is that they go silent. And I think that is happening at the moment. I think men are but they've always fucking run away. Sorry, am I allowed to say fuck on my...
Yeah, you can. I already said it, actually. Maybe you didn't notice, but I did. And how do you think men can access their vulnerability or their feminines? I mean, feminine and vulnerability is not the same, obviously, but...
It's a really difficult one. I've been running groups for a long time, and there's one guy that I work with who's been in a group of mine for 18 years now, and I said to him a while ago, why do you come? And he said, because if I go to the pub and my friend says to me, how are you doing? And I say, you know, not so good. He'll say, oh, yeah, have a pint. You know, did you see the football on Saturday? And in the groups that I run, I think that's the culture. Come in, talk about whatever you want. Now, obviously, not everyone has got the time, the energy, the money, whatever, to join a men's group. But we have to encourage probably our sons, you know, that generation. That's where it really, real change takes place. We have to encourage them to talk differently, and we have to stop giving them these stupid messages around violence. I mean, maybe it has. I haven't got a son, so I'm, you know.
Yeah, I was going to say you've got a girl.
I dodged that bullet. Yeah, I've got two daughters. I was so relieved when, you know, they were like, oh God, thank God for that. I don't have to deal with the father son thing. But no, I mean.
But what do you tell them?
I don't know if I tell them anything anymore, because they seem to know what they're doing. But no, I've always given them messages about being strong women, or at least taking them into environments where they've got that message. And I've always treated them with respect. And I think that's what's missing, right? And that's really, if you want one simple buzzword that people can take away from this. No, but that's the magic word for me. Respect is more important than love, because I think that love without respect is not
love.
Useful, right? It's not love. But you don't have to like me, but if you respect me, we can probably communicate. And I think I've always... Someone asked me recently how I discipline my children, and I didn't know how to answer. I thought, wow, that's an... I haven't got a clue. I've never disciplined my children. I've talked to them with respect, and they seem to respond to me with respect. And so it's not really an overt thing. By treating them respectfully, I think I've taught them that's something that should be an expectation and that they will take into all their relationships. And they seem pretty good with that, because when people don't respect them, they come and tell me fairly quickly. You know?
And you talk since the beginning about strong women or men. What is it? What is a strong woman, or what is it to be a strong man? Because I think that's where the mixed messages are. Yeah. Somehow, being strong means in our society, at least, being strong mean like to over, you know.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's a good point, because I think we have some really dreadful or non-role model. We don't really have, as men, we don't have many role models. I think that's a big, big problem in itself. Yeah, you know, it's really very out of date. So what was the question?
What is it to be a strong woman?
So yes, I think for me, to feel strong in my masculinity is to not feel ashamed, you know, not feel apologetic, and to be willing to be wrong.
Okay.
You know, that's really vital, to be willing to be wrong and to be curious about other people's experience. There's a real strength to someone who's curious rather than defensive. Or arrogant or defiant, you know. I might be wrong here, you know, but I feel good in myself, and I feel my self-esteem is intact enough that I can walk into the room and be willing to be wrong and explore that if I am, rather than having to fight, you know.
And is it the same for being a strong woman?
I guess so. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to ask a woman, really. I don't know that that's my place to answer that. But I think authenticity, you know, it's an overused word that can be a bit generic.
That's a buzzword. That's a buzzword.
But, you know, authentic is not being nice. It's not tiptoeing around. It's not being fearful that if I say something that is my truth, that it's, you know, not politically correct. I think you have to go beyond that, and you have to be brave enough to really express who you are and either stand up for it or apologize graciously and see someone else's point of view. And I don't see why that would be any different for men or women.
Yeah. That's true. And last question, but we've watched this documentary, The Work, which is basically like dangerous men or men in prisons that have killed or that are very violent. And they have this men's group. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because it's very close to, maybe that's something that people should see, both women and men, actually.
Yeah, I would say so. Talk about it in what way? What
do you think, let's see, what do you think they try to bring as a message with this documentary?
I don't know. I don't know. I never really thought about that. I mean, it absolutely resonated. What I witnessed in that film, which I thought was a great piece of documentary filmmaking, was a bunch of stereotypical gang members behaving in an incredibly unstereotypical way, which I recognize from the groups, all the men I've worked with, whether it was in prisons or wherever, which is you give guys permission to explore their softer, more vulnerable sides, and what you get is deep tenderness. And this is a word that someone, I was interviewed for a book on masculinity a couple of years ago, and the guy said to me, what did I feel was the essence of masculinity? And I said tenderness, and that really surprised him, because it's not a word that we associate with men.
True.
But I think in men's hearts you don't have to dig very deep, and isn't surely that's what we mean by gentlemen. You know, there's a deep gentleness and a deep tenderness that I witnessed in that film between each other. But you know, it was not overly delicate or fragile. It was tough at times. It was like tough tenderness, yeah. And that's a kind of contradictory statement into it. But it was like, no, come on, man. You know, man up. It's not a phrase I really like, but I get in that context that's what they were saying to me. Come on, you're a better man than this. And I think that's what men can do without shaming each other. And this is what I mean when I say, so you know, women have a role where they have to challenge society in a certain way. Men have another role, and we can't always do it. So my friend talking about female misogyny, it's kind of her job to do that. As a man, I think I can say to a man, come on, you're better than this, and he's not likely to be triggered into shame in the way that if his woman says that to him, he's more likely to collapse or attack, right? So this is the job that we have as men, is to really challenge each other, and it's why I'm not necessarily all that compassionate to how what a hard time we're having at the moment as men. I think, no, we it's our job to challenge each other, and in that movie, I saw the perfect balance of a bunch of very, very sophisticated, evolved men who were willing to kick each other's asses with love. And that's really what it comes down to, but right?
I should have asked you that before, but why is it that men are, not that they are raping, but actually are not very gentle or gentlemen? They don't behave like gentlemen. A lot of them, not most of them, but a lot of them, like in the subway or in the street, or what? I mean, why is that? If they are like so tender, or why are they like behaving like pigs? What's the point?
Yeah, I wish I could answer that. I don't know. I mean, I was...
Is it culture? Is it?
Yeah, I guess so. You know, I mean, I was always, well, maybe we're frightened too. I don't know. I was always raised to open doors for women. And I know those kind of things are now kind of a political hot potato. Does it mean that you're diminishing a woman? If I open a door for a woman, or I offer her my seat, it's not because I think she's too weak to stand or open the door herself. It's because that old notion that we used to call chivalry, which to me was never diminishing a woman, it was about honoring a woman, still exists for me. And I think, yeah, I mean, if there's an end goal here, surely it's that we honor each other and we treat each other with respect. But I think men have got more work to do. I think women have got a lot of work to do as well, and I think they need to be finding ways to express their frustrations in ways that aren't necessarily so furious with us. I mean, that does help to be able to hear someone, but we, as men, we need to not complain and just get up and do the work. Right. You know, that's the reason we call it the work.
Okay, cool. And so, again, this podcast called Vlan, which means slam the door. Would you slam the door to something now?
In this context, I don't know. Again, I think it's no. Open the doors, get in there, get men and women talking, get men on their own talking, get women on their own talking, get them together talking. Just talk, you know, bring this stuff out. When people swallow stuff, when people hide stuff away, it doesn't help at all.
But also, I guess, if I may, it's talking, but without shaming the others.
Yeah.
No, unless a lot of shame.
But unless it's appropriate, right? You know, I think if you behave abusively, it's not that you should be shamed or humiliated, but you should be held accountable. But I think at the moment, probably what's going on is women are doing most of the holding men accountable, and actually men need to step up and hold each other accountable. And we need, as you know, to our brothers, we need to be willing to say, look, this is not okay. This is not appropriate behavior.